This is the MLB Extras Braves podcast. Tim McMaster here along with Mark Bowman, our Braves reporter. Mark, we're going to continue to go around the horn, so to speak, for the Braves, checking in on all the different positions. Today on the podcast, we will cover the starting rotation and the depth that could get into that starting rotation based on injuries and what could go on there. We'll also talk about a couple of young arms that could find their way into that rotation at some point that have made their way already on MLB Pipeline's top 10 right-handed pitchers list that came out this week. And then we'll hear from one of those guys as well. Kyle Wright was at the Rookie Career Development Program earlier this month, so we will hear from him. But let's start at the top of this rotation. Although it's kind of hard, this Braves team obviously won the division a year ago, but when you start looking at the rotation and trying to figure out, all right, here's number one, here's number two, here's three, four, and five, it kind of blurs a little bit. But because of experience and the year he had in 2018, is Mike Foltynewicz the ace, so to speak, on the staff?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. If you're going to go ahead and call him a frontline starter based on what he did last year, I mean, that's fine. But we all know that to legitimately earn that title, he's going to have to repeat what he did last year. There were a lot of good signs that the big adjustment that he made, you know, from year to year was his delivery. From the windup was much simpler, less moving body parts, threw more strikes, had more command of his fastball and, you know, his slider, which is his primary weapon. You know, I look at I glanced at it the other day on StatCast. You know, I think there's probably 25 guys, so it's not necessarily fair to say this, but just to kind of give an idea of why the slider is so important to him. 25 guys threw that pitch at least 750 times last year. The only guys to have a better expected weighted on base average were Chris Sale and I think it was Dylan Bundy. And you know, obviously the success of Chris Sale and Dylan Bundy last year was much different. But at the same time, you look at what Folty did, being able to maximize the great tools he's had. Yeah, he's certainly the one guy you can say he's a frontline starter. Can Sean Newcomb make that jump this year? Well, you know, there were a lot of doubts about Mike Foltynewicz at this time last year, too. So, Newcomb at times last year showed it. Sean, you know, you look further in that rotation, what you have in terms of depth, you've got Kevin Gausman, who has the potential to be a solid number three in the National League. We saw the success he had when he came over to Atlanta last year. And then you go further into, you know, if you dig into those numbers a little bit, you start to see that some of those StatCast numbers, whether it's expected, you know, expected weighted on base average or expected batting average, whatever. You know, there were some alarming numbers there. He pitched a little bit better than, you know, maybe, or the results were better than expected. Let's put it that way, based on exit velocity, launch angles, that kind of stuff. But, you know, here you have a guy that has experience, and the same can be said of Julio Teheran. As maddening as Julio has been, you know, has, because he's been so inconsistent over the years, he does qualify as at least a solid number three or number four, and that could prove very big down the stretch, you know, as the Braves are trying to preserve the innings for, you know, many of these young starters who could make an impact later in the year, whether that's, as you talked about, Mike Soroka or Kyle Wright or Tuki Toussaint, Luis Gohar, does he join into that conversation? What they have right now is at least capable of matching last year's success. You know, and obviously they won the division last year, but at the same time, I think there still is a need to continue looking at ways to possibly get a Sonny Gray or another pitcher via trade.
Yeah, this rotation may not be set as it is constructed right now. You mentioned Teheran, and 175 innings was good to see from him last year as far as the innings eatings goes. Newcomb was up to 164, which is great for a young arm as well. Now, they got Kevin Gausman from the Braves at the deadline, and he was real good with the Braves. Let me redo that.
They got Kevin Gausman from the Orioles late last year, and he was really good in his time with the Braves after having a tough first half really in Baltimore, but that's understandable considering the type of season that the Orioles were having. But Gausman, after the trade, 5-3, a 2.87 ERA and 10 starts with the Braves. Is he a lock to be in that rotation?
No doubt. He's a, you know, right now, if you're projecting how you're setting up that rotation, you look at Folty opening day, and if you want to go righty, lefty, righty, Newcomb goes two, and Gausman three, I would think. Maybe, you know, Snicker gives the nod to the veteran, gives instead of, you know, pushing Julio back from six straight opening day starts to five straight opening day starts, pushing him back to number four. Maybe he puts him in there. But, yeah, Gossman's going to be in that rotation. You know, the big thing with him last year, he has stuff. He has tremendous potential. He's, you know, and he showed he was able to compete, you know, with a team that was in a pennant race. He'd been there before with the Orioles during the early part of his career. The biggest difference, I think, was defense. You know, you look at the two different defenses he had to work with last year with Baltimore. It was, you know, certainly not even comparable to what he was able to benefit from in Atlanta. And I think that's big when you're assessing all these starters this year. Again, you know, this defense has a chance to be, you know, really good again, because you've got Ender and Ciarte and Acuna in the outfield. You know, the question is what kind of, you know, mobility, dependability that does Josh Donaldson provide at third base. He's not going to match, you know, what Camargo did most of last year. A few guys can. I mean, I've said it time and time again, this guy is the best defensive infielder within their system. You know, whether you're putting him at third base, shortstop, second base, very dependable, and he's going to be able to show what he can do at each of those positions this year. But you know, the key is what kind of success that Donaldson has with the glove at third base. Just when you're trying to evaluate, can this team match what it did last year defensively? But yeah, I mean, I think that Gausman, it was impressive to see what he did during those first five, six starts with Atlanta last year. He showed his potential. We all know that it's there. Can you say that he has a chance to be a number one or number two in the National League? Haven't quite seen that yet, but at the same time, they're in a much better position with him within that rotation than they were even at this point last year, where, you know, the big loss from this rotation last year was Anibal Sanchez. Nobody knew what to expect from him. Having lost him, knowing that you have Gausman there and the young arms coming, that at least provides, you know, some, you know, a level of confidence that would not have existed had they not made that deal with the Orioles before last year's trade deadline.
And that brings us to the young arms. You have Touki Toussaint, who made it up last year, 2-1 with a 4.01 ERA. Max Fried spent a lot of time with the club, pitching out of both the bullpen and starting. Soroka and Wright, we mentioned. Gohara. I mean, there's all these guys. So in spring training, is Toussaint, because of what he did last year, the leader to be that fifth starter? Or is that going to be kind of an open competition with all these young guys in spring training?
You know, I think it all has to do with the health of Mike Soroka. If Mike Soroka is healthy, I don't see how he's not a part of that rotation. And when I say that, you know, the expectation is he'll be ready for spring training. Once you get into spring training and start throwing on a regular basis, how does that shoulder react? Can he prove that he can, you know, remain durable? Do they try to take it easy with him early on just to preserve, you know, what he might be able to provide later in the season? That's always a possibility as well. So you do have these options, and all these guys, you know, you can send them back and forth between AAA and the big league. You send them down to AAA, you can, you know, monitor their innings a little bit, or you are able to do that. Something you couldn't do at the big league level. Gohara is probably the most interesting piece to me. Both he and Fried fit in the bullpen for me. I mean, I think that both of them have that potential to provide more depth out there, be that even maybe be that Josh Hader type weapon out of the pen where you can rely on him for multiple innings a couple of nights a week. But at the same time, you know, Toussaint might be given that fifth starter spot at the beginning of the year. The question with him is his walk rate. You know, he's always walked a few too many guys, even when you look at the success he had at the big league level last year. You know, the walk rate was higher than you would feel comfortable with. So having all these options, knowing that Kyle Wright is there as well, Bryce Wilson, and you know, I touched on Fried there. The thing that interests me most about Fried going to the bullpen is just where his velocity went last in September when he knew he was not going to be starting anymore, when he knew he was going to be a reliever, and it jumps from 92, 93 to 95, 96, and you see that stuff, the way that fastball plays there and how much more effective that made his curveball. He truly intrigues me as well as a potential bullpen piece. But having all these arms available, knowing that maybe even at some point this year that Ian Anderson's going to be on the horizon, you know, people might be saying that, will he be ready at some point in July, August, September? This team has plenty of arms. Now, if they go out and make a deal for a pitcher, or we're not getting through this podcast without saying JT Realmuto's name. So
there it is. There it is. We need a bell. We need a bell of some kind to ring. Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to eat into that depth, but it's going to be interesting to see exactly how they utilize these guys. But even if they deal a couple, they have enviable depth remaining.
Yeah, it's certainly a good place to have. And at some point, you have to deal some of them, I think, because it's just too many guys to go around. You mentioned Soroka and Wright. They're number one and two in the system. They both made the top 10 right-handed pitching prospects released by Pipeline this week. There's so many other guys that are kind of just in the discussions for these lists as well. It is really impressive. How long can they go without having to trade these guys when they're just going to end up, I guess at some point they're going to get bottled up at AAA.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get bottled up, you know, and the other thing is this. We all know that not all of them are going to hit. You want to trade them before their value drops. Gohara had, you know, what we can consider just an odd season last year. We all know what happened last winter. His father got sick. His mother got sick soon after. He spent some time in Brazil with his mother last year. His off-season training, you know, was very minimal last year. Let's just, you know, he came to camp out of shape and had the injuries. You know, looking at him, you don't know exactly what you're going to expect. You can say that his value dropped a little bit last year. Another arm, you know, prospect whose value dropped is Colby Allard. If we were talking about him last year, we would have said, you know, he's right there with Soroka. Now all these other guys are mentioned ahead of him. You know, when you start realizing or remembering, let's say this, because this has happened forever, that, you know, prospects only keep their value so long, you do want to deal, you know, a handful of them. You have to make the right decision on which ones to deal. You know, every once in a while, you're going to give up somebody who has a great career elsewhere, but at the same time, you have to evaluate that depth, figure out what makes the most sense for you, and realize that, you know, if you hold on to all of them too long, you're going to have decreased value with far too many of them, whether that be the value that you realize on the field or on the trade market.
All right, Mark, Chop Fest is coming up this Saturday at SunTrust Park, the annual fan fest, basically, for the Braves. A chance there'll be some players there, a lot of fun stuff going on. But part of it is that the Braves Hall of Fame will open its doors, and Terry Pendleton is heading in. He's a guy that was, I think of Terry Pendleton as just a big part of when the Braves kind of reestablished themselves way back, the beginning of the great run they had in the Maddox and Glavin era. How important was he to those teams?
Oh, very important. I mean, you know, the story I put together for him going into the Hall of Fame, I mentioned he was maybe the most influential pioneer, you know, amongst the players. Everybody knows, you know, what Schuerholz and Bobby Cox and Greg Maddox, John Smoltz, Chipper Jones, you know what those guys meant to the longevity of that streak of 14 consecutive division titles. But you go and you take a chance on Terry Pendleton, who had had a bad year in St. Louis the year before. He was, you know, frustrated with management. And I'll tell a story here real quick, just, you know, instead of just saying frustrated with management. I said to TP earlier this week or last week when I talked to him, I said, you know, just explain it. How do you stink so bad in 1990 and then win the MVP in 91 and 2? And he had won his arbitration case during that leading into that 1990 season. He flew to St. Petersburg. That's where the Cardinals trained then. And he got off the plane and there were some front office executives there waiting in the lobby to meet somebody else that was on that flight. And a guy walked up to him. He shook his hand. And this is how he greeted him. Congratulations on winning your arbitration case. This will be your last year with the Cardinals. Again, in other words, you know, we're not real happy with what happened here. Things got started off on the wrong foot. Whitey Herzog resigned in the middle of the season. That upset him. By August, you had Joe Torre coming in to manage the team, and he was told that he had to play Todd Zeo on a regular basis. TP was going to the bench. But, you know, I think TP's character really showed during that time when Zeo began playing on a regular basis. He started going out there and working with him on a regular basis, taking on that leadership, mentoring role, coaching role. When he came to Atlanta, he was ready and willing to work with the young players. He was energized, motivated. I think this story has been told countless times. At some point in spring training that year, they're around the batting cage, and he told John Scherholz, you know, who was in his first years, preparing for his first season with the Braves at that time, hey, this team can win. And the day before the All-Star break, they were out in Los Angeles, and they had just lost for the second time during a three-game series against the Dodgers, who then went up 9.5 games heading into the break. And there's a bunch of guys, you know, kind of heads hung low there on the bench after the game, and TP made a point to go up and down that bench. This is after the game. You know, it wasn't just pick up your glove and go back to the clubhouse. And he basically told them all, this race is far from over. And by the end of August, the Braves were in first place, and everyone knows the rest of the story. But that impact that he made, he and Sid Bream, Otis Nixon, that season, that just set the tone for what the Braves had for the next 14, 15 years. When you look at that success, you have to say that he was as influential as anybody to creating that culture that Bobby Cox wanted in his clubhouse.
And he will be celebrated this weekend as part of Chop Fest. Great stuff as always, Mark. Thanks for joining in on the podcast.
All right. Thank you.
We mentioned Kyle Wright with Mark and how he could be a part of that rotation at some point in 2019. And he was at the Rookie Career Development Program in Miami the first weekend in January. It's a program where players from all 30 clubs who are close to the big leagues go and learn some life lessons about how to live off the field from former players, also some coaches, how to act in the clubhouse, how to be on social media, how to stay out of trouble in general. MLB Pipeline's Jonathan Mayo was down there. He sat down with Mike at the program. Here's a bit of that interview.
I mean, obviously it's an honor. Like you said, there's a lot of good players in the organization, and, you know, plenty of guys are very deserving. I was just fortunate to be one of them. And, you know, it's a very, very cool thing and exciting thing to be here and be alongside a lot of other great players. So I started in Double A and kind of struggled a little bit. But actually Tukey kind of took off and saw how well he was pitching. So, you know, I feel like I should probably step my game up a little bit. So, I mean, yeah, and then along came Bryce Wilson as well, and he came in and was throwing the ball well. So I think we kind of all feed off each other, and we all kind of made each other better. And, you know, to that point, you know, all three of us ended up having pretty good years. So I definitely would say, you know, having a lot of good players helps kind of propel you to the next level. So it was quick, you know, but, you know, I guess they felt like they wanted to at least, you know, try it. But, you know, I was obviously beyond happy for it. And, you know, I was very appreciative of the opportunity and kind of happy to have gotten a little bit of a taste of the big leagues. You know, like I said, it wasn't that long, but still pretty cool to get up there, kind of get acclimated to kind of how everything works, get to meet a lot of the guys. It was quick, but, you know, I mean, definitely not complaining about it. I feel like while I was up there, whenever I feel like I had success, I threw my pitches for strikes. Whenever I kind of struggled a little bit, as I was falling behind the counts, and you know, guys up there, they don't chase, they don't swing at bad pitches. So it's really important to throw all your pitches for strikes and execute them the way you want to.
Thanks to Jonathan and Kyle Wright for being a part of that interview. And, of course, thanks to Mark Bowman. You can find Mark on Twitter at MLB Bowman. My handle is MLB_McMaster. You can find all of our club podcasts at MLB.com/podcast or on Apple Podcasts and Google Play as well. For Mark Bowman, I'm Tim McMaster. Thank you for checking us out.